This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. Good evening, everybody. It's Nate G, along with Dr. Doug Lyle, with the Beat Your Genes podcast. We are here in 2018's first show of the year. Dr. Lyle, how are you doing today?
Good, good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, doing good. So we've got a lot of questions rolling in, so really appreciate everybody sending us your questions. I put them in the queue, and we get to them as soon as possible. So if you haven't heard your question for a while, don't worry. It's still in the queue, and we'll get to it eventually. We had a really great year last year in terms of our listeners. We reached about almost 325,000 listens total. And one of the really cool things is one of our listeners actually created a Facebook group for, it's called the Fans of the Beat Your Genes podcast. So Haley, I just really want to thank you for putting that together. So if you guys want to go on Facebook and discuss some things, there we go. Now we have that.
Dr. Lally, how cool is that?
It's so cool, isn't it? I don't even know how to use half of Facebook, but I'm going to figure it out.
I have never logged in to Facebook. I have a Facebook page that I don't know how to get into it. So that's pretty cool thing. All right, very good.
All right, well, we've got some questions today, and funny enough, the very first questions we picked today has to do with social media. And this is not a comment on Haley at all. It just went in the order that it got. So, All right. So, dear Dr. Lyle, what is the esteemed dynamic of people who decide to share their lives and watershed moments, like life moments, like graduations, birthdays, anniversaries, on Facebook and other social media platforms? Are they lacking in self-esteem, so they are looking for other people's esteem and approval? Is this some sort of signaling? What are the big five personality traits that might be associated with regular social media posters who share their lives versus people who are more private and don't?
Wonderful question. All right. So just to answer the last question first, as it occurs to me, it's I believe that we're going to find that people that are on Facebook are far more likely to be extroverted than people that are not. So I'll bet you that there's a big main effect for that. Now, let's talk about why people would do this behavior. So we're going to back up for a second, and we always begin the investigation of the reason why anybody is doing anything. The first place we start is we understand that they're running a cost-benefit analysis. So they take the time and trouble to do Facebook because they're running a cost-benefit analysis of that activity against all other activities that they could be doing with that time and energy. So at the root of it, the reason why people are using Facebook or anything else under the sun, or they're doing anything else under the sun, is because their brain, playing a three-dimensional chess with evolution, is essentially believing that it's the most efficient use of their time. Now, it's the most efficient use of their time for what? For getting a hold of something that it's the most efficient use of their time for survival and reproductive optimization. So we can't quickly connect the dots and say, well, how does that translate to me having more children or anything else under the sun? And what we're really going to be looking for is we have to go down a level and understand that the currency that drove human success and evolution was esteem. And so they are looking for esteem. So now let's get let's get clear what these different words or different terminology is when we're talking about esteem. Esteem comes from the word to value. So esteem means that we are valuable, which means we are worthy of effort and energy, etc. And it means also that that we are esteemed more than some other object, event, process, or person. In other words, it's there is something about us that is worthy of energy expenditure on the part of other people or animals. So an animal could esteem you very much. My cats esteem me a great deal for good reason.
Is esteem the same as validation?
No, not validation. Probably people use that term. That's kind of a funny term, actually. If we try to pick apart the what people mean by validation, it's sort of a fancy word with a vague meaning, as far as I can tell. The esteem means valued. So we could use another word that's a little, it feels a little gauche, but it's the same thing, which is status. Okay, so higher status, lower status. You know, you and I share with between the two of us, you have more status with me than a hell of a lot of other people. Okay, so believe me, there's some people ahead of you in line, mate.
even you saying that felt just automatically felt pretty good.
But the point is that
my head is growing
you,
as you speak.
Yeah, what you have is you. What we have to do is we have to make choices. We discriminate between individuals. We discriminate between different types of food. We discriminate between locations that we could be in. We are discriminating. We are making judgments of value, and so we are looking to try to get as much esteem as we can. Because esteem is going to be translated into survival and reproductive success. So the esteem dynamic, in other words, what is driving the motivation of people who share their lives on Facebook, what they're trying to do is they're trying to outcompete other people for esteem in those people's lives that are watching. And what they're seeking is they only vaguely and kind of unconsciously know this. What they're hoping for is esteem signals from other people, like, wow, you're really cool, you're really fancy, you're fancier than other people that we may mutually know. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to compete in this village hierarchy to be thought of as having better genes, being more valuable, etc. Now, there are three different esteem processes that are distinct. The one that we are obviously aware of is what we call, well, is what most people call self-esteem, but it's not. It's what we call esteem, or being valued, or being validated, or whatever the hell it is, or being loved or liked. All of those are terms saying you are valuable to me. So when you like somebody, you feel a medium amount of value. That's the word that we use. If you love somebody, that means that you value them very highly. That's what that word means, is it means to value highly. The now, so people are attempting that where the rubber hits the road in evolution is when people esteem you. That means they choose you to be mates. They choose you to be friends. They choose to trade with you. They value what it is that you do, and they will swap some of their time and energy and expertise in exchange for yours. So we seek to be valued. That's what we are seeking. Now, along the way, prior to them actually trading with us, they will also give us cues that they will trade with us. So the girl will flirt with you and give you signals that she'll have sex with you before she'll simply have sex with you. So there are esteem cues. So those cues cause emotional reactions to people, positive and negative. So if you get a rejection cue that you do not have as much esteem as you thought, that feels bad. You feel rejected, disappointed, you know, miserable, angry, whatever it is that you're jealous, okay? All kinds of nuances of negative feeling associated with negative esteem cues. You feel positive, pleasant, happy, secure, or extremely excited, depending upon the context of which you are receiving positive esteem cues. You would be elated if the esteem cues are much higher than you thought they were going to be, or that it's a much more significant survival or reproductive value than, you know, than, and you had a higher value or better feedback than you expected, okay? You are pretty happy when the feedback's about what you thought it was going to be and you thought it was reasonable and good, good feedback, and you're kind of happy or neutral or negative, et cetera. It's running the gamut from extremely positive feedback to extremely negative feedback. Now, the and it's not just the nature of the feedback, positive or negative. It's also how what survival and reproductive value is it tied to. So if you thought that you were going to die of a deadly disease, and then it turned out that your test came back and it turns out that you're going to survive, that it's actually a benign version of whatever it is, you're going to be elated, okay? So it's all about how many survival and reproductive chips are on the line with respect to the feedback that we get. In that case, it's not an esteem feedback. It's a feedback from, you know, from nature about whether or not we're going to live or die. Now, so there's three levels of esteem. There is the what we are generally focused on is the real live situation where real live people are going to make real live trades with us, and they make real live cues that they're going to make those trades by saying, you're hired. We're going to hire you. We like you. We want to set this up and talk over the financial details, but I think you're going to be happy. They just sent you a bunch of positive esteem cues, okay? Yes, we'd really love to have you guys over for dinner next week. Can you make it such and such a time? That's an esteem cue, okay? Or, yes, I'd like to go out with you. That would be terrific, you know, where, et cetera. Those are esteem cues. Then the real live rubber hits the road on those trades later, okay, where there's real live exchanges taking place. So there's esteem cues that are signals of the esteem, and the esteem itself winds up being, you know, how much you're valued winds up determining the other people's actions on what it is that they're going to do with respect to trades as those trades result to mates, friends, and trade. Now, there's another category of esteem that I've talked about often on here that it's critical to understand the distinction, and that is what we're going to call self-esteem. This is where you have an internal audience that is designed by nature to monitor your efforts as you attempt to improve your abilities at various and sundry displays that other people will be judging in order to determine whether or not they want to choose you in trade or choose somebody else in trade. So your internal audience is monitoring how hard and diligently you are working, and if you work hard and diligently at this, you may or may not be making very much progress, which can be a different independent emotion about disappointment at your progress. But your self-esteem mechanism will give you very positive feedback about your very diligent efforts, and it will give you very negative feedback if you are not doing a very good job about working at whatever this process is. So that is self-esteem. So self-esteem is a different entity. It's actually essentially a social psychological function of the brain. As the brain, it's as if little people living outside of you on your shoulder are watching you. The self-esteem mechanism is effectively not inside you. It's as if it's inside the heads of mythical people, and they are sending you feedback as if they were real live people sending you feedback. So that's the self-esteem mechanism. Now, there is a third esteem mechanism. The third esteem mechanism is going to be what I call pseudo-esteem. So pseudo-esteem, there is self, think of this in layers. There is a self-esteem mechanism that is actually your own internal judgment of you. There is an esteem mechanism, which is your responsivity to cues from real life people about how much it is that they value you or do not value you. Then there's going to be a third level of possible sensitivity and competitive process, which is going to be at the level of what I call pseudo-esteem. So pseudo-esteem is going to be when people know of you by reputation. They have not actually, they do not know you. They are not actually trading with you. They are just learning of you, okay? So you can imagine this evolved as a potentiality as human groups got larger than 40, 50, 60, et cetera. You can imagine particularly in early agriculture where suddenly you've got villages of 2,000 or 3,000 people. And so when you have that happen, you cannot be earning esteem by your direct actions and other people are watching those and the whole world simply either knows you or doesn't know you and has an evaluation of how much they esteem you. It's going to turn out that there's going to be reputational processes where people might, you know, 50 people get to know one hero in their little local corner of this village about what an outstanding human being is, and they tell other people. They say, you know, Joe Jones, unbelievably stand-up guy, unbelievably good shoemaker, and if he gets it wrong, he'll get it right. He's just incredibly honest, decent person, okay? Somebody that hears of this that doesn't even know who Joe Jones is and just thinks to themselves or says, you know what, I'm going to get a pair of shoes from Joe Jones, okay? This is pseudo-esteem, effectively. He doesn't even know Joe Jones yet. So so what you can see, the phenomenal importance of pseudo-esteem. And it's going to turn out that human beings are going to realize that there are ways to cue people as to how much other people value them. So, for example, when I was a teenager, there Ralph Lauren came out with a little polo on your shirt, okay? So if you wore a little polo on your shirt, you were a little bit more cool than the kids that didn't have a polo on your shirt. So everybody figured out that that was a little bit more expensive. And so, therefore, you know, you might come from better jeans because you can waste a little bit more money on a sweater because it's the one of the ones with the polo on the shirt. So this winds up being a way of signaling how valuable you are, okay? Same thing with a fancy car. Same thing with a fancy house. Same thing with a fancy haircut. Same thing with a club membership, logo on your shirt, et cetera, a degree from Harvard University. So let's look at what a degree from Harvard University is. I just meet a guy and he says, well, you know, when I was at Harvard, blah, 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 okay? What is he attempting to get? Pseudo-esteem, okay? He is attempting to use that as a marketing tool. I don't know anything about this guy. I don't know what it is that he knows. I don't know who he knows. I don't know his character. I don't even really know his intelligence. I sure as hell don't know his ability with respect to anything that I might want to trade with him. But what he has is he has a pseudo-esteem cue that actually acts as a shorthand for how much I should esteem him. Okay? Now, so people are obviously quite confused about this because they are thinking, Chanel number 5 and a Ferrari, these are superficial bullshit that human beings seek. Well, that is true. It is superficial, but they are cues. And the person asked, you know, are they trying to signal something? You bet they're trying to signal something. Yes, I was at Tahoe with a bunch of my friends. We had a big bonfire, i.e., what is that about? I have the time and the energy and the resources to not be working on a factory floor somewhere. Instead, I could go to Tahoe to a ski resort so I could waste those resources and go there. And I had a bunch of friends, which means my friends are also educated, intelligent people that are trading for a lot of money, so they also could go to Tahoe. And then we all like each other, i.e., the fact that I say that we had a bunch of friends and we all went to Tahoe and had a good time hanging around the campfire. It's like, and we sang songs. Okay, what does this mean? Well, we've got some talent in the group. We've got some intelligence because they got good jobs. They, you know, have good credit, so they got credit cards that work, and then we stayed at the resort. were also athletic, so we went on the ski lift. It's like, wow, they're signaling a hell of a lot of stuff. And there was like 19 of us there, and they all like me. I'm a member of this group. So therefore, you would probably like me too if you were sufficiently cool, because I've got a whole bunch of people that signaled that they were willing to have me dead center in the middle of that group. That's why they post the thing on Facebook. That's why they do it. Okay? They are signaling that they are accepted, that they are have resources to do things. They're showing what they did. They're showing what they eat. I'm having a great time here in God knows where, Monterey, and we saw the aquarium, and then we had a nice lunch, and then we went to Ghirardelli Square, or whatever the hell it is, okay? So this is what people are doing. And so we might roll our eyes and say, boy, and this person asked the question, is this that they are lacking in self-esteem? No, not at all. This is no indication of a lack of self-esteem. Self-esteem is an entirely different issue, and so I'm trying to slowly and painstakingly educate people that there's three different esteem processes: self-esteem, esteem processes, and pseudo-esteem. Okay, the people you cannot afford. It is not wise in the modern world to ignore pseudo-esteem processes. Pseudo-esteem processes have tremendous potential leverage. So you would want to not be, you wouldn't want to be miscategorized according to pseudo-esteem cues as to who it is that you are. If you can get a Harvard degree, good idea to get one, okay? If your kid's smart enough to go to UC Berkeley, don't send him to Cal State Long Beach. Not a good idea. You don't want him fighting in a competitive battle in a lot of these markets against people that are his genetic equals, but they have far better pseudo-esteem cues than he does. That would be a competitive handicap. So pseudo-esteem is not absurd and not superficial. It is an inevitable byproduct of a hunter-gatherer creature that esteems others and now has grown into large agricultural-based, you know, civilizations, where you cannot get your esteem. You can get your esteem in a different way that is in fact useful in human decision making through pseudo processes. So that's why I have what I call the 80% rule. If you can afford a $25,000 car, you should be driving a $20,000 car. You can think of who it is that you could trade for if they knew really who you were as a bell curve. That's your market. You don't want to have to go after all of your market. It's too expensive. In other words, in order to compete effectively with other people that are advertising for in those markets, you would, if you were to use 100% of your available resources in order to enhance as much as possible your pseudo-esteem cues, you would be able to then reach 100% of the people in your market that you can reach with that marketing process. But that is too expensive, okay? It's not the most rational way to behave. I don't have a game theorist and a mathematician to help me, so I don't actually know what the right number is. But my eyeball estimate as a rule of thumb is, if you can afford a $25,000 car, you should be driving a $20,000 car. Because you will be categorized generally correctly by your market as to who it is that you really are through that pseudo-esteem cue. You will leave a few people off the table, but you will get the majority of them, and you want to get the majority of them. But you do not want to spend all your money or your time or your resources in order to do so, because you want to save those resources and invest them elsewhere, particularly in the modern environment. You're able to save money, and money puts you in a position of power where you do not have to be making trades in commerce with your time and energy that you don't want to make because you're desperate. Okay? So if you can afford a $500,000 house, you should be in a $400,000 house. The whole notion is you should be reasonable. You know, if you can afford a $500 suit, you should be in a $400 suit. The notion should be, just in general and in principle, you should be reasonably close but not to the maximum of what it is that you can afford for anything, because you want to be saving resources to be in a position of power. Okay, that way you are. It is not costing you very much to not send the maximum pseudo-esteem signals. Facebook is a fascinating sociological phenomenon. You are watching the importance and the seduction of pseudo-esteem. The pseudo-esteem inherently has a potential amount of fantastic amount of leverage, because you don't actually have to have people know you, watch you, learn about you, and do anything for them and see the result in order for you to get the esteem. You can get it in a pseudo process, okay? So you can see the feverish feel that people have where they feel like, damn, I could maybe get a lot of esteem, okay? I might be able to put myself in a position to get exposed and sell a much larger market than the one that I can get to directly, and therefore cherry pick people from the larger market that would be potentially more valuable, and optimize my actual steam trades if I can if I can maximize my reach. Okay, this is what's going on, and so people are addicted basically to the potential of the energy conservation that comes with a leveraged process. I have to tell you that the more I look at this and the more I feel for this, this has the hallmarks of what I wrote about 20 years ago in The Pleasure Trap. So processed food is very exciting to the human nervous system, because the nervous system is wily enough to understand that processed food, it's picking up cues from the food, from the chemical concentration, that it can tell that it's more energy per cubic centimeter than the food that is not processed. And as a result, the nervous system is attracted to it like a moth to light. It's like, that is a really good deal. Remember that the two constraints of life are time and energy. So you're only going to live so long. You've only got so much time. You don't know what that is, but you have an inherent biological clock that estimates this. You also only have so much energy. You have so many neurons can fire so often, and so many muscles can contract so intensively. You've only got so much neural and muscular energy to produce the outcomes that you want to optimize survival and reproductive success. That being the case, this organism is designed by nature to look for shortcuts. That's why the predators go after the weak, the sick, the slow, the isolated, and the injured. They do this automatically because they're designed by nature to seek this out. This is why animals prefer cooked food, because they can already tell that they don't have to chew through it and digest it. It's a lot softer. Okay? It's why humans prefer cooked food. This is why we like fire. This is why we not only like the feel of the fire, we like the look of the fire, we actually like the sound of the fire, and we actually like the smell of the fire. All of these things human beings like, because fire was an extremely useful method for reducing energy expenditures. Now, Facebook is an energy expenditure pleasure trap mechanism in the search of pseudo-esteem. That's what it is. And so it's not the only thing that it is. Facebook can, obviously it could be very much used in business for the same reason, okay? Effectively done, effective marketing tool, potentially effective. So this is what it is. So the people are not in any way necessarily lacking self-esteem, because self-esteem isn't necessarily in the landscape here. You can see, though, what this questioner was asking, because it's tickling something. There's something about it that seems out of balance, and it is. That you can sense that someone who is investing a great deal of energy in seeking pseudo-esteem is essentially pleasure-trapped by this process. This is now going outside the normal bounds of pseudo-esteem seeking in humans, in normal signaling to each other directly for real-life people that they bump into physically during the day, but they want to have cues to signal who it is that they are. No, now we're talking about people that you're never even going to meet. And investing a lot of energy in these pseudo-esteem cues is a fascinating seduction. And when people do a lot of it, I would say, hey, they're probably, they're really chasing their tail. They're probably not just self-esteem deficient, they're esteem deficient, and that's really where the rubber hits the road, that they're feeling a chronic hunger, and they're not getting enough esteem cues from real-life people that they value enough to feel satiated, okay? That doesn't make them bad, and it doesn't make them sick at all, but it makes it potentially, if they're spending a lot of energy there, it's telling you that things are, they're getting out of balance, and they're probably not getting a lot of happiness out of it, but they're not sure what to do. This is very much like people that are addicted to cigarettes or addicted to processed food. So that's what I think about this thing, and had I understood this 15 years ago, I would have put every nickel I had in Facebook.
Fascinating.
Okay? Facebook is, in fact, the cigarette of the 21st century. And
wow.
I remember when it opened at about $18 or $20, and I remember listening to a respected analyst say, don't ever jump in on a new issue. How do we know if this thing is going to succeed or fail? And I at that time, I didn't understand nearly as much about human nature as I do now. Now, like every genius, in retrospect, I've got this thing nailed. Now we see what it's worth, okay? And now we can look further and understand why. So that's mm-hmm. the story. That's a great question, and I hope that gives the questioner a lot of good food for thought.
Fascinating. All right. Well, we've got a caller that called in right as you were answering this. So let's welcome caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hello. Yeah. Yes.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Welcome to the show. It's Nate and Dr. Lyle.
Hi, guys. So my name's Molly, and I am calling with a question. I work in the criminal justice system on the probation and parole end. And I have an individual on my caseload right now who is sort of an interesting case, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So she's proven pretty difficult to work with. I think she would probably check a couple of boxes on the Harris checklist. I think she probably has some sort of personality disorder, though I don't know what, and she's not been formally diagnosed with anything. She attempts to manipulate quite often, but is not very good at it, so it's usually pretty transparent. And she spends more time seemingly, I guess, trying to run schemes than she would. Like, she spends more time and energy trying to skirt the system than she would if she actually was just doing the right thing. So my question is, how do I manage someone like that, and why would it be that you would spend more time and energy doing the wrong thing than, I guess, the right thing, when that would be easier? And I guess, do you have any tips on how to manage that when I don't have much of a carrot to hang?
Okay. Well, what you've got is just there's a reason she's on probation or parole or whatever it is that she is.
Right.
She broke the law, and it probably wasn't the first time. So the law being what it is, it was probably the 27th time she finally caught. And and so we know that she's very likely to be, not everybody that's on probation or parole is low conscientiousness, but you're describing a low conscientious human. And you're also describing a not very smart human. So when you get somebody that's low conscientious and not very smart, you get somebody that's constantly trying to cheat the system and isn't very good at it. Gets caught.
Okay.
So all you've got here is the average person in the criminal justice system is about 90 IQ, and that's probably what she is. 90 IQ places her at about the 15th percentile or so of a given distribution. So that's why she's easy to catch, because she's out of seven people, she would typically be the dumbest one. So as a result, any shifty schemes that she tries to run, the other six people are smart enough to see it coming.
Right.
And systems are set up to see to it that the other six people don't get screwed out of resources when they're looking the wrong way from anybody. So it turns out
okay.
the little dum-dum can't get her hand in the cookie jar without an alarm going off somewhere. So that's called a credit report. Now, the way we manage anybody like this, and I'm not sure what it is that you're trying to manage, is that we simply have very, very clear, very precise, direct, well-articulated rules and regulations and penalties.
Right.
And we're very dispassionate about our the penalties. And whenever they make any mistakes, we dispassionately dispense the justice associated with those. And that's it. And probably
right.
if we're going to do a particularly good job with somebody like this, we want to signal to them that we're actually on their side, that we have compassion for how, you know, what a box they're in, but that the judge is merciless, okay? And
right.
that you are helpless to help them in front of the judge, and that therefore you're just informing her of what these dire consequences are very possibly going to be, and that you don't have any choice at all, that when you see her break any rule, you must report it because you are
right.
being audited. And so sorry, Charlie, this is the way it goes, and I hope you come up with your probation fees next month, because if you don't, you may be going to the pen. Okay?
Right.
It's not
just,
a nice place.
The,
so, yeah, go ahead.
The struggle that I've had with her so far is that the violations have not been so severe as to warrant remand. I mean, and eventually they'll add up, I'm sure, and
yeah.
that'll be the result. But
right.
it's really any sort of intermediate sanction that I impose doesn't seem to have an impact on her. And I don't
yeah.
have – I really don't have much hope for her rehabilitation in the long run. But
of course
I
not.
She is – her crimes
yeah.
where she – embezzled money from her former employer to the tune of about $100,000.
Right.
So I guess when I say manage, I really mean, like, how do I motivate her to the point that it will minimize the damage that she causes to the community in the future?
Never happen. It's a really good question, Molly, that what you're basically looking at is a sociopath. And
right.
so so there is no rehabilitation. So this,
okay.
this individual, what town do you live in?
I for confidentiality of this case, I can't really.
Yeah,
say.
No worries. Just I'm just letting you know that in Los Angeles County,
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna assume that that my podcast is not being heard by low conscientious, low intelligence sociopaths. So I could say this.
Probably not.
Okay. That if you're in Los Angeles County and you embezzle $100,000, you get a free pass. They're so
right.
busy. They don't even prosecute these cases. Okay.
Right.
If you're in Tulare County, you know, it's going to
mm-hmm.
be the big case of the year and some DA is going to run for reelection on pinning you to the wall. So the bottom
right.
line is the flakes sometimes are too stupid to know where it is that they should be mining for gold, and but they will never stop mining. So
right.
the answer to your question is, this is what I call parts is parts. a friend of mine told me that, I don't know if this is true or not, but this is his way of saying it. He says an 84 Jaguar is a beautiful car. It's a beautiful car. Terrible electrical
right.
system. Okay, it doesn't work. And you can pull out every single wire in that thing and put in new wiring, and it still won't work. Okay? So what you've got is a shifty, worthless sociopath who is more cost than benefit to human nature. That will be true to the end of her days. So no sweat.
Okay.
Parts is parts. Okay?
Fair enough.
Very good. Don't waste it. But save your energy for the sweet little person that can use your compassion and use a little extra attention. Don't waste any time on this one.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. All right, Molly. Thanks
thank
for calling.
You.
Molly, thank you very much for the phone call. I really appreciate it. All right, Dr. Lau. So we got time for one more question, right? I think it's yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. Do you want to do the one about the 10 years of marriage? The one right, the next one, or do you want to do the socializing and the introvert one?
I have no idea. Just do the 10 years marriage one. That sounds interesting.
Okay. All right, dear Dr. Lyle, a few days ago, my husband and me marked 10 years of our marriage. However, it was a normal day for us, no gifts, no presents, not even a special dinner. My husband was well aware of this day. I prepared him a present, but because his birthday follows a couple days after, it was technically for his birthday. He's not greedy, and he buys things when necessary, but this was a significant day in my life. What does this indicate for you? I really wanted to hear your answer on this.
This is a thing of beauty. All right. I have like 50 things that come to mind on this one. The first of all, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Okay, it could mean everything, but the several things come to mind. First of all, what counts is not what happens on this given day. I'm laughing because significant relationships I've been in, I am not at all conscious or active about, quote, special days or anything else. I have a feeling that this is a derivative of not uncaring, but actually, sorry, I didn't hear what your good joke was. It's a derivative, I think, of a lot of emotional stability. And so people that are very emotionally stable don't get real excited about anything real easily, and they don't get that upset about anything real easily. And I've been accused of being a flatliner. And I'm not nearly as bad as my good friend Alan Goldhammer, who we're not really sure he's not an android, all right? So the truth is that the question is, it isn't what happens on that day, because that's going to be significantly different from about people's, you know, traditions, their, you know, how it is that how excitable they are, et cetera. All kinds of things can swirl around this. What really counts is what is the sum total of the esteem signals that that person gives you over the course of the 10 years? What does that look like? Okay. What does it look like now in year 10? So it doesn't have to do with whether they bought you a 10-year bracelet from Zales, okay? What counts is, do they treat the relationship, i.e. who it is that you are, as important? That's what counts. And there are males who can be very, very stable and not necessarily very expressive in that way. And, you know, that can be a problem. And I think it's quite possible that males and females differ in how closely they monitor relationships for these signals, quite possibly as a result of the fact that females are inherently more vulnerable in relationships in general, because they could be impregnated. You know what I mean? Whether or not the woman's 50 or 30 doesn't make any difference. Her psychology infers that she could be pregnant, impregnated, and abandoned. And so women are designed by nature, I believe, to be somewhat more security-seeking. Not always, and trust me, this could go upside down, because men can be vulnerable when they feel like they've got a screaming deal, and they feel like they can be paranoid, worried about competitors, worried about the woman defecting, and everything else under the sun. So they can be nutcase possessives, but I think that in general you will find that the male psychology and anxiety about relationships in general is going to be lower, because effectively they have less to lose. And so I think women, you know, let's face it, it's women that want to see signals from men that are like, wow, you know, are you really into me? Are you, is this really important to you? Because it's really important to me. And the males, it isn't that they care less, it's that they feel less threatened, because they feel they have less to lose if the woman happens to be in a position where she wants to abandon them. And so I believe that leads to a differential amount of emotional volatility or sensitivity or monitoring in this situation. So it doesn't mean that females are neurotic and men don't have any feelings or empathy. I just feel like there's a difference there. And I think that, hilariously, I think that this is probably, you know, just probably a very good relationship, very smart, stable people. And I think the guy loves this girl, but he's a little bit of a flatliner. It's like, hey, 10 years, just it's another day. And, yeah, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere and I love you, so what the hell? Let's move on. my good friend, I won't disclose the name, but he wanted to celebrate his anniversary by going to work. So in any event, I doesn't necessarily mean anything. Of course, it could mean that the person is not into the other individual, but we would have to analyze the whole context of what that relationship looks like. But the simple fact that the guy didn't want to put any energy into a 10-year signal is not necessarily indicative of anything. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's how I would answer that question. We got to look at the broader signaling context.
Sounds
all
good.
Right.
Okay.
Good enough.
All right. Excellent. Well, Dr. Lyle, as always, love hearing the answers to these questions, and we will be back next week. Really appreciate it, Dr. Lyle.
Right.
And have a wonderful night.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.